Here on Giants.com. So glad you could join us alongside Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes as we'll be discussing all that is related to the New York Giants. Two ways to interact with us here on the program, 201-939-4513. You could also chime in via social media using hashtag GiantsChat. And we want to remind you, Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings, the daily fantasy sports destination. At DraftKings, you can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com and enter promo code CONTACT to play for free today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports free to play. We'll get to your phone calls, we'll get to your tweets a little bit later on in the program, but we are continuing to preview and recap all of the Giants draft picks, and we have a very special guest on the line, the head coach of the Boise State football team, and that is head coach Brian Harsin, as the Giants drafted safety Darian Thompson in the third round, and they also have Dante Dion, the cornerback, as an undrafted free agent who they brought in from Boise State. Coach Lance Meadow, Paul Dottino here with you on Giants.com, Big Blue Kickoff Live. Appreciate the time. How's everything?
Lance, everything is great, and those two guys you mentioned that the Giants have right now, we sure love to have them back. But great, great people, great players. You guys should be excited to have them.
Well, Coach, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us today. And the one thing that defensive coordinator Steve Spagnuolo said already just after the first day of rookie minicamp about Thompson in particular was his ability to go right out there, be very focused, and on the first day, he was already barking out signals as a defensive quarterback, if you will, playing safety with all these other kids out there who, quite honestly, they just got here, and not a lot of them even know what's going on. But Thompson was already taking the bull by the horns, and Spag said that that was something right away that stuck in his mind as a really good first impression. I'm guessing that doesn't surprise you based on what you know about Thompson.
Well, it doesn't. And, you know, first impressions are huge. And one thing about Darian is he's going to show up prepared. He may not know everything, but he's going to know as much as he can each and every time he goes to a practice. And that's really been how he's operated ever since he's been at Boise State. Even prior to when we got here, we knew that about him from his high school days all the way into Boise State. He's just a guy that prepares. He understands it. And I think that's what you see on tape. You see a guy that's got great anticipation of what the offense is doing. Well, why do you get that? You get it by studying and understanding what they're trying to do to you. So I think that's a guy that it's going to be hard-pressed to find, you know, many guys that will spend as much time studying the game and developing off the field than Darian.
Well, and Coach, the numbers certainly show that. Darian Thompson, 19 career interceptions, which was a new Mountain West record. It broke Eric Weddle's record, who's now with the Baltimore Ravens. What is it about his game that allows him to be so opportunistic that he was able to pile up so many interceptions over his career?
Well, I think his study habits, one. At the end of every week, when I would have a chance to talk to him, he had a really good feel of what he thought was coming his way. And it did. It happened in the games. I just think his recognition of patterns, sets, and different things that he needs to be able to see when he goes out there and plays really helped him trust his instincts. When he did believe something, he went after the ball, and it showed up. You don't have that many clear interceptions if you're not anticipating what's coming. And then I think just that trust factor that when he did see it, he could recognize it, react, and go get after it. And then on top of it, being a physical player to go make some of those plays happen. So, just a very good player that studies the game, does a great job of applying that on the field, and, you know, hopefully that continues. But, we were very excited about when we got here just the type of player he was in those areas.
Boise State head coach Brian Harsin joins us here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Coach, one of the things that Steve Spagnuolo loves to do is play left and right safety and interchange them. Not your typical strong safety, free safety positions as they're usually defined. Now, the way things kind of developed with Landon Collins last year, he was a rookie out of Alabama, he looked as though he was going to be a better in-the-box, strong safety, and the Giants really needed someone to compete at free safety. the thinking here, at least, that's going around these parts is that because of Thompson's ability to make a lot of interceptions and the way he anticipates, as you said, he would be better suited to play free safety or that center fielder, if you will. What do you see the strengths of his game besides the obvious anticipation and ball hawking skills? Is he going to be the kind of guy who could play either safety if necessary, or is he better suited just to be that center fielder style?
Yeah, well, I think the coaches there, I'm certain, will figure all that out better than I can in their system. But from what I've seen, you talked about it early on in the interview, he's a guy that will go out there and direct. He can play down in the box. He can play free safety and roam. I think wherever they decide to use him, one of the big keys to his success is his communication skills. And so as long as he's able to talk, communicate, help other guys get lined up, or at least communicate the calls on defense, to me that's probably where he's most valuable. And if that's a free or that's a boundary safety down in the box, however they decide that, or both, I think that's the key part of his game is letting him direct the defense in the back end, communicate that down to the front seven and get everybody on the same page. If he's able to do that within their schemes, I think those guys are utilizing him the right way.
Coach, what do you think his biggest adjustment's going to be, or the one question that you might have in terms of him being a successful NFL player? I mean, the Giants are going to throw him into this competition. They've got some young guys there who have been injured in the past who are trying to win a starting job. Thompson gets drafted in the third round. He's going to be right in that mix to win the starting job this season. So what is he going to have to do and raise his level, you know, to be an NFL starter if, in fact, he's going to win that job?
Well, I think one thing everybody talks about is speed of the game. It obviously changes. There's very good players around you, very good players that you're going against, and so adjusting to that, which he will. The one thing about Darian, he's going to show up and give you 110% every day, so his speed will eventually catch up to what those guys around him have been doing for the last few years. But I think also for him is trust in his game. You know, and continue to keep believing in his anticipation, believing in the way that he prepares, and believing in what he sees when he goes out there and plays. And to me, his game's got to get faster, which it will, like I would say for any guy coming in the NFL.
Yeah.
But to continue with the skills that he's built throughout his time here and developing those and honing those in even more, I think are going to help him. But one thing about it is DT is going to compete. He wants to play. He loves this game. He wants to be on the field. So whatever the coaches are telling him he needs to get done, he is going to spend time doing that until it gets done and then work on whatever's next.
Talking with head coach Brian Harsin of the Boise State football team, two players from Boise State currently on the Giants, kind enough to give us a few minutes here on Giants.com, Big Blue Kickoff Live. Coach, in terms of any rookie, when they come into the league and they may not be necessarily penciled in as a starter, playing and contributing on special teams is always an important factor. And the one thing that's jumped out to me about Darian Thompson, I remember back in the Senior Bowl, you know, he made a number of key plays on special teams. And even if you look at the film at Boise State with your team, you know, an integral component of your special teams, what jumps out to you about his play in that area? And most guys, you know, sometimes they have to want to contribute in that facet of the game. Why did he have such a desire to chip in that facet?
Well, I think everybody wants to play on offense and defense and special teams. That's your gift to your team. If you're a starter on O&D, your gift is to give back on special teams and to go out there and play at the highest level, because that is where the game can really change. And I think one thing, I think our guys believe that here, but Darian's a guy that I know understands that and how important it is. He wants to be on the field. If we would have let him play offense, he would have done that as well. The guy just loves playing, and that's the one thing. You're going to get every bit. He's going to give you everything he's got, and as many opportunities as you will give him, he will go out there and play. And so you're right. You know, young players on special teams, go prove your worth. Go down there, run down. Be a guy that can make plays. Do it consistently. He's done that before. He's going to have to do that again and show that he's valuable in those areas. But I would say this, I know he understands the value of being on special teams regardless of his position on defense, and it's just another opportunity for him to contribute, and that's what he wants to do.
Coach, I got a two-part question for you. I want to ask you about something that Thompson told us during the rookie minicamp. He said, you know, a lot of people, they look at us and they say, oh, Boise State. And they give us an underdog mentality. They let us have a chip on our shoulder if we want to carry it, and boy, we do. Everybody who plays at Boise State says, hey, you know what? They want to say that we didn't play at a bigger powerhouse. Well, we're going to show them. And he said that that mentality is something that really drives your players in particular on the Broncos. And I want to ask, how much of that do you think will help a guy like Thompson as he does climb into the NFL? And also, quite frankly, Dante Dion, who was at 5'9", a very diminutive corner, and I got to think he's been told his whole life that he's an underdog, and I'm sure he's going to be, you know, tried as a slot guy here. But how does that play into it, do you believe, or is that overstated?
Well, no, I think this. I think there's definitely that mentality here. You know, our guys do have a chip on their shoulder. Everybody in this program does, coaches included. And I think you just have to have that. I certainly think you have to have that as an NFL player. If you don't, you're surrounded by so many talented players and so many guys that are professionals and work extremely hard to be successful. If you don't have a chip every day, I'm not quite sure how you're going to succeed. And that's my opinion, and that's what I think of the NFL, because as you study these guys, it's impressive not how talented they are, but how hard they work to be successful. And so I do think that'll carry over into what he does for the Giants, and I do believe that's going to be a big part of his day-to-day success, which is really, in my opinion, what it takes to play at the highest level. It carries over Dante Dion, absolutely. Probably been told too short. All the other factors that come along, and there's not a guy that I've been around with a bigger heart that plays and makes plays. You know, he's a guy that's very talented. There might be some physical limitations, according to some people, but the guy plays big, and he plays the size you want him to, and he does it consistently, and he's got extreme confidence when he goes out there to play and absolutely loves this game. And so he's a hard guy to not want to be around or to not have on your team, because he brings so many things to the table when it comes to the game of football. So I think both those guys, that's a mindset. I think at that level, if you don't have that chip, I don't think the guys pan out. When you start thinking that you made it, I think that's when things catch up to you. And that's just something we try to avoid as much as we can at Boise State, is that attitude of, you know, we've arrived, or we're the best rolling out there. No, we got a lot to prove each and every day, and it's not just on game days.
Coach, you were talking about Dante Dion, the undrafted corner that the Giants brought into camp, and the fact that he is 5'9". But one of the things that jumps out to me when I was looking over his numbers is the fact that he's piled up a lot of tackles for loss during his tenure at Boise State. I'm curious, was that for what you asked him to do within the system, Coach, or is that just a matter of he just loves physicality and he doesn't mind getting down and dirty in the trenches?
I really believe our time here with him, it was more him. He made some plays. That wasn't something we were asking him necessarily to do, is go make your tackles in the backfield. But here's a guy that would see things on the field, would see a bubble screen, and be able to come off that receiver trying to block him and go make a negative yardage tackle. So to me, it was more about him and his aggressiveness, his attitude, and just how he plays the game. And he loves to be physical. He is not going to shy away from that. He will tackle you. He will do everything he can to go and not just tackle you, but bring you down. And that's just something that I thought we inherited. I thought we did a good job of developing and letting him play the way he wants to play. But that's a mindset that he showed up to Boise State with, and I know that's going to carry on, you know, into the NFL as well.
Talking with Brian Harsin, head football coach of Boise State. Coach, before we let you go, in terms of how much communication have you had with both Dante Dion and Darian Thompson since they were selected and signed by the New York Giants? And what's your message to those two players as both of them look to lock up roster spots?
Yeah, really not much after they got drafted. Congratulations. It's time for those guys to go to work, and they need to focus on that. That's a big part of this next step in their development of their lives. But You know, my message for them is the same thing that we've talked about here for a long time. Work hard every single day. It's a day-to-day process, and don't look further than that. You know, what can you do to get better today? And I know those guys will. I think, you know, the NFL is probably a place that even more so that becomes more apparent each and every day, because you got so many guys out there striving to be great and doing it on a day-to-day basis. So we're just excited for them here in Boise, Idaho. We're proud that we have guys like those two representing our program in the NFL because they're great people, and we're very proud of them. And we're just looking forward to those guys having a successful start to their career as they build into these camps and summer and preseason games. And we're going to be right here in Boise, Idaho, cheering them on.
Great stuff.
Well, Coach, greatly appreciate the time and the insight. We thank you for a few minutes, and best of luck with your team moving forward.
Thank you so much, Coach.
All right, thank you, guys, and go Broncos.
All right, sounds good. Head Coach Brian Harsin from Boise State, kind enough to chime in and provide some insight on Darian Thompson and Dante Dion.
I heard one very, very, very strong common thread between both of those players as the coach was talking. Besides hard work, which was clear, I heard a lot of instinctiveness, football smarts, guys who are really well prepared, because we already heard that point blank about Thompson even before the coach came on with us today. But then when he started talking about Dion and saying that wasn't by scheme, he's getting all these tackles and tackles for losses because of his physical ability. Well, you're not going to do that at 5'9" if you're not prepared and you're not anticipating and recognizing bubble screens, like he said. That says to me he's also one of those guys who's very instinctive and who's very good at studying and seeing what's going on the football field.
Can see
field.
The play develop before it necessarily comes to a finish.
And the numbers reflect that. That's not just, you know, throwing cotton candy, you know, at the guy saying, hey, you know, sweet things. The numbers are clear. You don't do that unless it's either scheme-related or the guy has an instinctive ability to make plays. And you just heard what the coach said. He was doing that. It wasn't about our scheme. We didn't direct stuff to him. He was making plays.
Which is an added bonus to any coach and any scheme. And, you know, we talked about how Paul, when we were looking over his measurements, Charles James at least was the first guy that came to mind. Somebody
sure.
who hustled, played above the X's and O's, just to make his name known in camp to give him the best opportunity to make this team.
And, you know, that's a great example. And I would actually direct Dion to talk to a guy like Charles James, who beat not only odds, but long, long odds, just like Dion's going to have to do because of his diminutive size. And, you know, at the very least, he should watch some of the Hard Knock shows from the Houston Texans, where James was making it so difficult for them to get rid of him. I mean, he just worked his butt off. And O'Brien was sitting there at his coach's table, and he's talking to his guys. He's like,
how do we cut him?
How do we do it? Yeah. Charles James, look what he did again today. How do we? And somehow, some way, Charles James is still stuck around like flypaper in this league. You know, he may not always be on a 53. A year or two, he's been on a practice squad and so forth. Then maybe he goes away. Then he comes back. Then he lands somewhere else. He's like flypaper. He keeps sticking around. You know, because there's somebody in the league who always going to say, wow, look at the heart. Look at the desire. Look at the work ethic. Look at the energy. There's always room for a guy like that at the back of the roster. And so, you know, I'm going to tell you something. If everything that we've heard about Dion is accurate, and we're going to find that out when they get out there, you know, rookie minicamp, still not enough.
Yeah.
Not enough. We're going to watch him every day in August. I'm going to tell you, this is one of those guys, and I've already got a group of about 7 or 8 guys who I'm focusing on before I pick my one guy. I couldn't do it at rookie minicamp. There was just not enough to see. I think this is one of the undrafted rookie free agents who's got a shot. I told you the other day on Giants.com, we did one of our stand-ups, and please log on if you wanted and get a look. I said what the answer question was.
We were talking about how many undrafted free agents.
Factor fiction, 3, right?
Correct, yes, 3.
And I said I think 3.
You did.
I would not be surprised. I really do believe this is the best undrafted rookie free agent class that I've seen the Giants bring in recent memory. And I'm saying 3 guys are going to make it. I would not be shocked if Dion is one of them, even at 5'9", because I think he would be a slot guy for sure. You're not going to stick him outside.
On the outside.
But a slot guy and a special teams guy.
And there's opportunities in the slot based on how the current roster looks. They lost a number of free agents who played out of the slot last season. They still have Trevin Wade, and Eli Apple could perhaps make the transition. There's talk about maybe Janoris Jenkins, but here's a guy that's got perfect experience.
You're
going to
keep five, maybe six corners.
You got to protect yourself.
Okay. And Hosley is not here right now. McBride is not here right now.
Yeah.
And those guys were veterans who would have been able to say, at least we have experience on you. Well, guess what? Those guys who have that experience are not here, which means a guy like Deion is coming in against a relatively even playing field where if he breaks his butt and he shows something, no one's going to have the excuse to say, well, so-and-so's got more experience than he does, so maybe that's a good enough reason to keep him instead. That's not the case. Deion's got a pretty wide open field here to try to win himself a job.
As most of these other undrafted free agents do, too. I mean, I think there's going to be a lot of battles when you look at the back end of the depth chart. And, you know, it's also important to note that the two players coming out of Boise State, seniors, a plethora of experience in terms of
collegiately
college and what they did, you know, that's number one. And then, you know, the other aspect of what at least Coach Brian Harsin pointed out, their study habits, he credits as to why they were so successful on the field. And you know from Spags' defense, Paul, and the players that have orchestrated his defense, whether it be an Antonio Pierce or some of the other veteran safeties, one of the reasons why that defense came together and was
Smarts.
So successful, there you go. Chase Blackburn's another guy, you know, who came a little bit later on. But you need somebody in the defensive classroom that has a knack for picking up good study habits so that he can pass on those messages to the rest of the group. And Thompson and Deion both got very high compliments from head coach Brian Harsin.
You know, when you finally put together a player's grade, and we talk about this all the time, you've got production, that's one thing. Measurables, another thing. Medical, another thing. Attitude, another thing. In the classroom, how's the book work? Another thing. What are his off-the-field habits and who's he hanging with? Another thing. So many different variables, so many boxes to check before you finally come up with a grade on a guy. Now, I will tell you, one of the services that I use, the Cooney service, had Deion as a fifth or sixth round draft choice with an arrow up. Now, NFL.com had him as a free agent.
Free agent, yeah.
But one of my services said he was a draftable third day player. So, as I said to you, the Giants got a lot of draftable players in the undrafted free agent pool. A lot of draftable players. I'm considering this guy as a draftable player. I guess what I'm saying to you is, folks, that to this point, a guy like Deion, he checks all the boxes except for size. And size, because of the slot corner position, which is now clearly defined in this league over the last couple of years. You didn't have really one years and years ago. You would just stick any old defensive back in there and say, okay, he's just going to have to go out there when they go with three wides. Well, three wides has become so popular the last few years that they have clearly defined a slot corner. That's actually a position now in the defensive coordinator's playbook.
Absolutely.
And that guy is usually 5'9", 5'10", 5'11". He's certainly no taller than that usually. A lot of times they like him to be smaller.
So he's versatile. He can run with the guys, whoever they line up there.
Especially with the quicks and the moves.
Yep.
Okay, because you think usually on the other side of the ball, the slot receiver is usually the smaller, quicker, more maneuverable guy. So that's why you want that corner to usually have those characteristics. So that's become a defined role now. Great time for Deion to come into the league because he come into this league
yeah.
6 or 7 years ago, there probably would have been no room for him.
More opportunities now for corners.
Now there is. So that's good. And so I don't hold that particular facet, the 5'9". He runs a 4.46, by the way. That's the clocking that I have for him. 4.46. He checks a ton of the boxes. Now he's just got to go out there in training camp and then the preseason games and produce to the level that he has put on paper. That's how he wins a job.
Well, one of the things Coach mentioned was the speed for both guys. You know, that seems to be perhaps the biggest challenge, the biggest transition that they're going to have to make. It's not necessarily just Thompson, but, you know, also even a small guy like Dante Dion, who runs fast, but, you know, same thing. Hey, it's up a notch when you get into the NFL. So we certainly appreciate Coach for chiming in and providing insight on both of those players. Now we want to hear from you at 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat. We'll also get to your tweets. Let's open up the phone lines. Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Armando is in Florida. Armando, what's happening?
Hey, what's up, guys? How you doing?
Doing well, Armando. How's things
with you?
Good. I'm hearing you guys talk about the cornerbacks, and I was wondering, as of right now, what is the list right now as far as making the 53-man roster as far as cornerbacks? How many cornerbacks are we going to keep?
Well, I mean, it's hard to tell considering these guys haven't been on the field too much. But, I mean, if you go based on track record and number, I think you're looking at that 5 to 6 range in terms of the number of cornerbacks, Armando, that they're going to keep. But, you know, to tell you who's on the back end that's going to be fighting for a position.
You know, Apple and Jenkins and DRC are your top three, not in that order.
Those three. And then
that you know.
And Wade comes back with the most experience of the group that's on the back end.
But he's got a battle.
He is. He's not a guarantee, but then after that, you know, you really need to see some of these undrafted guys on the field before you start to make judgments about, you know, who's making noise and stuff. But I think 5 to 6, Armando, is probably that number that you're looking at.
Okay, so if you got 4 already lined up already and you're talking about Dion that might make the team, I'm also – I've been looking at a lot of footage about this guy, Matt Smiley. He's an undrafted free agent out of Lafette.
Yeah, and Smalley.
This guy, man, this guy can fly, man. He's a great special teamer. That's why I think he'll also make the roster, just because he's a really great gunner.
Patriot League
really
player.
Tackler.
Right? Patriot League player.
Lafayette.
Not off yet?
Yeah.
You know, here's the thing. And you said 4, which I guess you're assuming Wade's on the team. I'm not giving anybody a spot beyond the top 3.
Yeah.
Which means to me there could be as many as 3 spots open behind those top 3. Maybe Wade does get one of them. To me, I think everybody behind those 3 has to win it. So if I go that way, then Wade's certainly in the mix. I think Dion's in the mix. Now, I don't know if I did Smalley.
Well, he wasn't necessarily projected as a guy that was going to go.
I don't think I did any video on him.
So it wouldn't necessarily surprise
you. Watch some video on Matt Smiley, and I'll give you guys, hopefully, if you can watch a little bit of video tonight.
I'll tell you what.
It's like maybe about 15 minutes.
This guy is,
what's that?
I was just going to say, I don't have any notes on him. I did 20 corners, video work on 20 corners going into the draft. Did not do work up on him. In fact, I didn't do work on Dion either. He didn't make my list of guys to do. So I'm a little bit in the dark on both. I'm going to get video on both of them, though, and I promise you by the end of the week I will have seen them.
Well, and Armando, I'll tell you this. There's a reason why they made a last-second transaction to at least bring him onto the roster, because, you know, clearly they do see some upside.
Yeah.
But, you know, then again, he's going to have to prove that in camp before we start to, you know, pencil in somebody specifically that's going to go ahead of the group. I think right now Smalley and Dante Dion are 2 guys that are similar in stature who probably are ideal for the slot, but until we see them out on the field and how they fit into the Giants scheme, it's hard to say perhaps who has an edge in that department.
Here's what I would say. Remember,
I've seen some tape from Smalley, and I also see some tape from Dion, and I actually think, honestly, that Smalley had the better upside, and actually I think he had the better play, even though Dion had the interceptions because of Darian Thompson, but I truly believe that Smalley has the better upside. I really like this guy. And if you watch some tape on him, I really think he would be maybe like a 4th cornerback.
He really
has the upside to be a 4th.
Numbers I have on Smalley, 5'9", 184. And at his pro day, he went to Temple for his pro day. He ran a 4.4 flat. Wow.
Fast.
Well, the both of them have speed.
This guy can tackle. This guy can – he would literally blitz from the corner position and get to the quarterback within seconds. I mean, this guy is – you have to watch the tape of this guy.
Well, and he's a kickoff returner, too. He's a return guy, too. So I promise you I will get film on him, and I will do a breakdown. And at some point, get back to me either on the show or on Twitter, and I will have an answer for you as to what I'm thinking.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
All right, Armando.
Have a good one.
You got it. Appreciate the phone call. The more and more you look at the numbers for Smalley and Deion, you know, they have similar traits because, as I mentioned in the interview, Deion, number of tackles for loss, and then Smalley also has 10.5 tackles for loss. He also has 4 sacks over his career. So, as Armando was noting, they did like to blitz him and bring him up to the line of scrimmage. I would give Deion the edge in terms of interceptions. He's got a little bit more in terms of being a ball hawk, but Smalley also wound up with 7 over the course of his career. So, you know, similar character traits, I think, if you hold them up, at least on paper.
The one thing, though, besides the measurables, which you can look at, the one thing you have to remember with the stats, level of comp. You're talking about Boise State,
yeah,
which, you know, that's the legit D1. I mean, no matter what they want to say about chip on the shoulder, that's big-time D1 football.
They've been challenged. If you look at their schedule and some of the bowl
they've been in a bowl.
I mean, to consider Boise State, even in this day and age, as like a mid-major is almost ridiculous.
But if their coaches and players want to think of it that way because they can use that chip on their shoulder to their advantage, I'm not going to take that away from them. But they've been in the poll. Okay.
Course, yeah.
So
for years. I mean, this is not new.
I don't want to besmirch them in any way. I was trying to be respectful with my question because I didn't want to tell them we think you're big time. But but in any event, Lafayette Patriot League, that's FCS. So you're coming down a full level. So level of comp is going to be an issue there. You're going to have to do a little bit more projecting.
And speed of the game, too.
No question.
You know, getting off the edge and sacking a guy in the Patriot League, a little bit different than what you have to do in the
quickness
NFL.
Of the game.
Yeah.
Frames of the guys, strength of the guys. You have to look right away. Whenever you're talking about a corner, okay, one of the biggest things you have to look at when you're considering an FCS player at cornerback. And everyone thinks right away, well, speed. No, it's about physicality because chances are the receivers he's going up against at his level in his league are not as big and as strong. They could be as fast. Sometimes you'll get burners down there in that league, you know, in the Patriot League. But chances are you're not going to get guys who have the full combination of speed with the strength, with the frame. And so now maybe he was able to shadow guys there or use press coverage there, but now when he steps up in comp, different story.
You got to make adjustments and so forth. So you certainly need to take that into consideration. Remember, fans, Big Blue Kickoff Live brought to you by DraftKings. Now, if you've never played on DraftKings, it's changed the way we play fantasy sports. Just pick your contest, pick your players. If you win, pick up your cash. Simple as that. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to claim your free entry today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports free to play. He's Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow. So glad you could join us for Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Let's head back to the phone lines. We'll also get to your tweets, 201-939-4513. Vic is in Florida. Vic, what's happening?
Good afternoon, Lance and Paul.
Good afternoon.
Vic, how you doing, my man?
What's been bothering me a bit, you know, we've been talking about safeties, corners, and all that, you know, fine, because we need them. But nobody has addressed the right offensive tackle. That scares me because we don't have any good right offensive tackle. And without that, we're going to be in trouble because I think Newhouse is useless. That's my perception.
Oh, okay? Vic. That's really mean. Now, let me just say one thing to you, okay? Marshall Newhouse and John Jerry along the right side of that offensive line have done a very, very adequate job of pass protection these last couple of years. And if they had not been able to do it, Newhouse, of course, just last year, Eli Manning would not be throwing for 4,500 yards and 30 touchdowns or so. So you have to give those guys some credit for being at least okay pass protectors. Now, you and I have talked about this before, and I've said it a billion times on this show, the Giants need to get better run blocking on that side of the line. But to disparage a player like that is just, you know, you can't do it. That's a paintbrush negative comment about a guy when, in fact, half of his game has really been okay. You know, he was signed as the third tackle. He was supposed to be a backup. It's not, that's not his fault. You know what I mean?
Yes, I'll take that back. Okay, I shouldn't have said useless.
There you go. There you go.
You need an established right offensive tackle.
I'll tell you what, Vic.
Good.
Vic. This is what this
I
is,
mean.
This
we don't is have, what, I mean, we really don't have one.
This is what I want you to do, Vic. Vic, next time you talk about this, talk about how you'd like to upgrade the right tackle position. That's a much more accurate and much kinder way of saying it, because that's what you really want to do. You want to get a bulldozer over there. You want a Kareem McKenzie over there, who is a much better all-around player than Marshall Newhouse was. But don't insult Marshall Newhouse. There's no reason to do that.
Okay.
He's a nice guy, by the way.
Are we actively looking for an offensive lineman right now, either free agent or...
Well, I mean, listen, Vic, there's a few guys that are out there on the market. I mean, the Giants don't necessarily publicly tell you who they may have interest in or who they want to speak to. But, you know, they have some guys currently in camp. You know, it may not rock your boat as a fan, but there's going to be some battles. And Ben McAdoo, you know, we can't emphasize this enough. He specifically came out and flatly said, the story is unwritten on the right side of the line, Vic. So what that means, I mean, you can connect the dots all you want. That means that they don't necessarily right now say, our right side of the line is ready to go week one.
Right.
There's going to be some battles. You know, Bobby Hart's a name we've thrown out. I'm not saying that he's going to be a right tackle. He may get some reps at right guard. He was a tackle in college, and he played right tackle a little bit last season. And he's a young guy that's unproven. You know, we haven't seen much of him. So you can't rush to judgment considering there's very limited film. I mean, he could emerge as somebody that, you know, nobody ever expected. But, you know, I think you got to give it time to see what the battles look like in camp before we all of a sudden rush to judgment and say, you know, there's no options and there's not going to be any battles on that side.
Vic, I would tell you this. If I had to put a couple of pounds of pasta on red or black right now, okay, I would tell you that I believe the Giants will have another guy in here competing for the starting right tackle spot, and this has not been determined. And that opening day against the Dallas Cowboys, there'll be somebody there. My guess is it won't be Newhouse. I think he's going to go back to being a reserve, which is what he was signed for.
Right.
That would be my best guess right now.
Hey, Paul,
yeah.
Let me ask you another question real quick, okay?
Go ahead.
Is Matt LaCrosse still around with us or not?
Yes, he is. Absolutely he is. He's a legitimate prospect who's going to fight, and that tight end battle is going to be a good one because they got a bunch of guys there right now. The receivers in Ty and Danelle, the Lacoste, who's truly an unknown, but I think has some potential, and of course they signed Jarrell Adams.
Yeah. Well, they drafted him.
They drafted him and signed him.
Yeah.
And so they really like his upside. So you got four tight ends there who I think are going to be involved in a real battle royal for probably three spots. And don't forget Will Johnson, who's the swing guy.
Thank you very much, guys.
You got it, Vic. Appreciate the phone call.
Love you guys both, okay?
All right, Vic. Appreciate it. Thanks so much for chiming in.
Don't forget Will Thompson, the swing guy.
Will Johnson.
Swing guy from the Steelers they signed. He's making the team.
He can play multiple positions. Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's going to be intriguing to see how it develops with him and Nikita Whitlock and whether or not they'd move Whitlock to defense to maybe give him more reps and an opportunity to make the team too. I mean, that's at least something to look ahead to, perhaps. One other thing I wanted to throw out, though, about Marshall Newhouse, Paul, is remember, McAdoo's got history with him. So if there's anyone that knows Marshall Newhouse and his ins and outs, it's McAdoo because they go back to the days with the Green Bay Packers. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not saying that that's giving him extra job security and so forth, but he's got experience. He knows his work ethic. He knows what to expect from Newhouse. So I think he can at least overlook that.
I will say this to you. If I were a guy who, again, wanted to put a few pounds of pasta on red or black, I would say this. If nobody else comes into camp, I think Newhouse has an edge over any of the tackles who are here today. However, if a more accomplished offensive tackle should find his way onto campus by opening day, you would think that if they took the trouble to acquire somebody and bring somebody in, that they see something there that they believe can earn him a starting job, and that guy will certainly be given every opportunity to beat out Newhouse as the starter.
Well, the one thing I will say, and, you know, listen, anything's possible, but remember, and this is something we've talked about time and time again with any offensive line, chemistry and continuity is important, and that starts, Paul, right now in off-season workouts. It doesn't start a week before the season. So I think that, you know, for those who may be anticipating, oh, perhaps there'll be somebody to be cut as the 53-man rosters get finalized and they'll come in and
if
all of a sudden
everything's
great. You got to put things in perspective.
If it's a veteran and especially if it's a veteran who comes from a West Coast system,
okay,
it would not be necessarily crippling for him to come in at the beginning of training camp and still compete and win the job by opening day. I grant you, it'd be great to have the guy here now, Mr. X. I give you that. But I don't think it's such a horrible handicap, depending upon the player. Again, his experience and the scheme that he's played in, that he could come in first week of August and still wind up being the guy. I don't think that's asking too much. And if it's someone who gets cut in the middle of training camp, he would probably be told, okay, listen, you're going to have an uphill battle here, but keep working at it, because we would not be afraid, if you show you deserve it, to make a switch even a couple of weeks into the season. So, again, that could be a situation where a latecomer gets here and he winds up then outworking or beating out Newhouse week three, week four, week five, so that Newhouse can't hold him off. That could happen too.
I'm trying to think of, was it Adam Snyder? He was brought in maybe 2 years ago. I'm trying to think of another veteran offensive lineman that came into the Giants late. Was it last year that he came in? Okay. If I recall, it took him some time to learn the scheme and the system, from what I recall.
And he was from the Niners, which was a West Coast attack.
So that's the reason why I throw even something like that out there.
But he came in, and I think by the time he got kind of squared away, I don't necessarily know how healthy he was. And, you know,
it was 2 years. It was September 30th.
Was it 2 years?
Yeah, 2014.
Jesus, it seemed like it was only a year ago.
It's understandable.
Yeah, it does tend to get blurry, especially with the
You're right. He may have been dealing with injuries at the time. I'd have to look up the exact details. But that's an example of a veteran guy coming in like we were talking about. I mean, you were saying maybe August 1st, but right before week one, you can't expect like that all of a sudden everything's moving.
Once training camp starts, there's much more of a sense of urgency to get the guy here. You'd hate to see him have to come in right before the first game. You'd like to see him either here at the beginning of training camp, or maybe a guy who you can grab in the first set of cuts. That second set of cuts makes it kind of difficult, because all of a sudden, in a flash of the eye, you're on opening day, and it's like, okay, now what do we do? You know, again, to me, the next hurdle or the next bar for getting somebody new would be the beginning of training camp. I think that's the next big one.
Let's head back to the phone lines here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Appreciate everybody for tuning in. We hit up Carlton in Harlem. Carlton, what's happening? Dave, I think we got Carlton on the line here.
Hello?
Carlton, are you there? All right, Carlton is apparently a man of very few words.
Well, incomplete.
Yes, hopefully
second down.
Hear from him a little bit later on. 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. You can also hit us up on Twitter. We'll get to some of your tweets along the way as well. I know a number of questions are coming in on a few different positions, but we still want to get to the phones here. We got Danny in Boca Raton. Danny, what's happening?
Hey, how you doing? I just wanted to know what rookie is going to make the biggest impact this year, and who's going to be the biggest steal from the Giants who they picked?
Well, are we talking about a combination of undrafted guys and drafted guys, or are you just looking at the drafted guys?
Only the drafted guys.
In terms of biggest impact, I think clearly Eli Apple, as the number one overall pick for the Giants, is going to have an opportunity in year number one to certainly play either on the outside or in the slot, depending on their alignments when we see three wide receivers. The one guy that I would not overlook, and Sterling Shepard to me is an obvious one too, but I think Darian Thompson has a legitimate shot to solidify one of the two starting safety spots. So that would be the guy that I would say watch out for. He can make noise, and maybe he's not expected to make as much noise. I'll throw his name out there as somebody to keep close tabs on during training camp.
I would be shocked if Sterling Shepard doesn't excite this crowd several times during the course of his rookie season. He's got that big play ability, which, holy smokes, you have to be born with it. You can't just learn it. You can't teach it. You got to have it. And I would say that he'd be my choice.
All right, Danny, anything else?
I think he's done.
Nothing else. Thank you very much.
You got it.
Thank you.
Appreciate the phone call.
And remember, with a guy like Shepard, let's just say for argument's sake, and I don't think this is going to be the number, but I'm just going to throw it out there for argument's sake. Let's say that Victor Cruz is healthy and Victor Cruz again, and he's out there starting with Beckham, and, you know, Sterling Shepard's the third receiver. And let's say he only catches 40 balls in his rookie season as the third receiver because Beckham and Cruz get so many themselves. I guarantee you out of those 40, there's going to be a good percentage that Shepard makes something pretty spectacular happen. He may not have gaudy stats at the end of the year, but watch his average per catch and look at how many big plays over 20 yards he has. And I think that's going to be the kind of thing that makes him an impact player as a rookie.
Well, and all you need to do is look at a guy like Dwayne Harris. You know, sometimes the third or fourth wide receiver, if he gets favorable matchups, watch out.
Yes.
Can make
yes.
some plays. And Harris did that last season when his number was called. So it wouldn't surprise me from that standpoint either. Let's head to some of your questions on Twitter. You can continue to give us a ring on the lines at 201-939-4513. AJ at AJ Marshall 3. Panthers cut Brandon Boykin, do you think the Giants should sign him to add depth at the nickel corner spot? Boykin, a veteran. He was with the Eagles. He was with the Steelers. He was signed this offseason by the Panthers. They have since drafted three corners, and surprisingly, they let him go. Perhaps they're going in a younger direction. Perhaps he didn't see much of an opportunity anymore. You know, you can read into that as much as you want. You don't see veteran corners like that, Paul, get on the market at this time, right as we're entering the beginning of OTAs and so forth.
Not very often. For me, it would be a kick-the-tire situation. I think I would investigate it. I'm sure the Giants have. And because of the lack of depth at corner and the competition that we were just talking about, 15 minutes ago, it seems to me you kick the tires. If you find what you like and you think there's a legitimate chance for him to win one of those spots, then you make the phone call and you say, hey, what can we do here? Come on in for a visit. Let's go through the physical and let's see if you can make the team. I would think he'd be the kind of guy you certainly would do some due diligence on, though, and certainly investigate exactly where he stands. If there is there a health thing that we don't know about? Was there a specific reason why he suddenly was waived besides the fact that maybe the Panthers would like to get younger? Was there something else going on there? You got to do some investigation before you decide if you're going to make that phone call and invite him in for a visit. But he'd be a guy I'd think about.
Certainly, if you want to gain some depth and experience at that position, which the Giants have been on the record saying they want to do. And, you know, you talked about the research and the homework. Remember, Dave Gettleman, who's got ties to the Giants, is the general manager of the Panthers.
That's a pretty easy phone call to make.
Exactly. Last time I checked, I think that's okay. You don't need to necessarily introduce yourself. Everybody knows each other under those circumstances. At E underscore the chosen one. Do you guys feel we are balanced on offense and defense so far based on what the current roster looks like? Interesting question.
I'm not sure I get it. Does he think that the defense and the offense are both of a same level, or is he thinking that there's balance on both sides of the ball within respects to each side?
Well, we can certainly interpret that. So, E, I'm assuming you're listening. If you could clarify your question. I mean, if you were to look at it, let's say in terms of how the roster looks right now. And competition-wise?
I would say right now there's more competition for jobs on the defensive side of the ball than the offensive side of the ball. Because on offense, you've got a heavy competition, at least you believe, at tight end. Okay.
Running back.
You have a lesser of a competition at running back.
Well, you got a lot of depth there.
You do, but the guys who necessarily win at the back end of the roster – may not have to play as much as the tight ends. So,
depending on the scheme and so forth.
You know what I mean?
I'm just looking at it. Listen, you never know who's going to have to play
on your roster.
So
you know
I
what?
Would say I'll treat them if they're fourth
and
or fifth.
And there's that real nasty thing known as the injury bug that flies around and bites you in the rear end
yes.
every once in a while. But for me, you'd like to think there's going to be a real competition at right tackle, but I don't know that there's a super stud there and a favorite right now, again, outside of the incumbent Newhouse. That, to me, is a story yet to be written, as the coach has said. So that I'm going to push to the side. To me, on defense, you've got competition at the free safety spot. You've got competition at the sub-corner spots. I mean, we don't know who's going to be nickel and who's going to be outside. We've discussed what we think is going to happen, but then who's the fourth corner? And the fourth corner's going to have to play. Let's not kid ourselves, Lance. Teams go four wide a lot in this league.
Yeah.
That fourth, who is it? I have no clue right now. Is it Wade?
Or,
we don't know.
Or maybe it's an additional safety.
Could it be Mykel Thompson? Could
Bennett
it be Bennett Jackson? We don't know.
I wouldn't cancel that out, though.
So
there's
that's a big
there.
Deal. The starting free safety is a big deal. The fourth corner is a big deal. Who's the third defensive tackle right now? Is it Bromley? Is it Nix? Is it Hughes? Is it somebody else? I don't know. And guess what? That third defensive tackle is going to play. He's not a guy who's just filling out a roster. He plays. So to me, those are real significant.
And then as far as the defense,
who's the middle linebacker?
Concerned, middle linebacker, too. There's big competition there. I think I would agree with you.
It's a lot more competition on defense.
Or you could make the argument that in terms of offense, at least, you know your usual suspects for the most part. In terms of the guys from last season, whereas on defense, it's, you know, up and down a little bit. Who's going to start at various spots?
Put it this way. There'll be heavier competition for a greater number of snaps on defense than there is on offense. Because let's face it, the guy who wins the fourth running back spot is not going to play as much as the fourth corner. I think you'd agree with that.
Oh, absolutely. Given the fact that how many times do you line up with multiple running backs and so forth.
The guy who wins the third tight end spot is not going to play as much as the third defensive tackle.
But here's the thing. The argument I would make for all of these positions, I agree with you in terms of starters, but the competition is going to be so important at those other positions you named, Paul, to bolster your special teams.
That's where the meat and potatoes
of your roster is made. Using your food analogies, I'm not going with pasta here, right? I'm doing a little meat and potatoes.
Well, I gotta go pasta.
I understand that. That's not a surprise. But
thank you.
We gotta be, you know, a little opportunistic across the board. With that
being
said,
pasta fills the belly.
Yes. Well, meat and potatoes does too. The last time I checked.
Okay.
Let's head back to the phone lines. We got Richie on Long Island. Richie, welcome aboard. What do you have for us?
Hey guys, happy Monday.
Happy Monday to you.
I was thinking, you know, about Sterling Shepard. Just a question with him. Now, this is no knock on him, but I hear, you know, great things about him, and I really hope he does become a great player.
Okay.
But, you know, why do you think that other wide receivers in this year's draft was picked ahead of him? Like maybe Josh Doctson. I don't know the official list of other wide receivers that were picked ahead of him, but, you know, in your opinion, why do you think, you know, other receivers were picked ahead of him?
Is it easy.
Maybe his size?
That's very easy, yeah. Because what happens is, when you look at these guys and you decide, okay, what kind of receiver do we need? A lot of folks are looking for the bigger receiver, the guy with the bigger frame, the guy with the bigger wingspan, the guy who's going to be stronger coming off the line, the guy who has those measurables. You look at Sterling Shepard, he's going to be the complement to Beckham and maybe even to Cruz. So they're looking for a different set of measurables. For the Giants, he's probably a better fit. I mean, I'll give you a great example. I had Tyler Boyd out of Pitt rated ahead of Shepard for me. I had Shepard rated in the high to middle second round. I had Boyd high second round. And I thought that Boyd going into the draft would be a really nice pick for the Giants at 40 because I was thinking to myself, okay, you know what? If you really don't know about Cruz, you want a little bit of more of a bigger, stronger guy, maybe Boyd can fit that role better. They clearly have decided, you know what? They just want to get quicker and faster. And let's think, even though they're cautious, let's think that if Cruz and Beckham are both out there, this guy complements the two of those really well and better than Boyd would. So
yeah.
I get that. Mm-hmm. See,
all right.
He's more of a big play guy too. He's more of a big play yards after the catch guy, as opposed to, let's say, a guy like Treadwell, who's more of a possession medium range guy. And again, size, frame, what do you need on your team? What's your mix? What do you want to add? You know, when you're making the meatballs, you got to make sure you get the right amount of breadcrumbs and the right amount of beef and the right amount of pork. You got to get it all mixed in there real nice.
Yeah, even though, you know, his small size, but he had a 41-inch vertical. So
yes,
he makes up for that clearly.
And that's the thinking. That's the thinking that the Giants are using right now.
Well, and Richie, you can even go back to the 2014 draft. It's funny you ask, you know, why did Shepard go later than others? I'm sure people are asking the same thing. Why did Sammy Watkins and Mike Evans go before Odell Beckham, if you could play hindsight? So, you know, sometimes you get too caught up in where guys were drafted, and we've seen fifth-round picks that turn into Pro Bowlers and franchise players. I wouldn't get too caught up in, you know, was there red flags, and that's why they passed on Shepard. It all depends on, I think Paul made a good point about the team's needs. For example, the Redskins, I know they took a wide receiver in the first round. But think about it. You know, they have DeSean Jackson. They have Pierre Garçon. You know, they were looking for a guy like
Doctson. Bigger frame.
Correct. Who could play a little bit more on the outside, whereas Shepard may have not mixed in well with that group. So you got to look at it from that standpoint.
All right. That's good to know. So, yeah, I mean, I really hope he turns into a Pro Bowl player. One thing, just a random question, because I was thinking about this the other day. You guys have been following sports for a while, and, you know, you cover a lot of players, but what do you think is the most overused terms that football players use, or any athletes use in general? Because to me, I think I hear, I just want to get better a million times.
Well, you do hear that a lot. You're looking at the cliched type of lines that we hear in the offseason.
Go pop in a DVD of Bull Durham, and I think you'll get the entire list right there. Costner was pretty good at using that script.
So many cliche lines. I'm like, oh, my God, I just want to get better. I just want to get better.
Yep, absolutely.
I hear you.
Thank you for taking my call.
I appreciate the phone call, Richie.
If I may, and I've thought about this a little bit in the last couple of weeks.
That's always dangerous.
And
anyway.
Yeah, I know. And I didn't want to really say this, but I think maybe it's appropriate now since we're talking about styles of receivers. I think if you wanted to equate Sterling Shepard to somebody the Giants have had in the past, I'd say Steve Smith with better quicks and more explosion. That might be about the closest type of guy you could talk about, because Smith was more of a diminutive size. He had some thickness and strength to him.
Yep.
Had good hands.
Possession type of guy.
Was a good route runner. Not as good as Shepard. Shepard's apparently an even more polished route runner than Smith was. And again, Shepard has more quicks. Steve Smith was not the fastest receiver you're going to find on the field. But again, slot guy, you know.
Yeah.
I'm thinking Steve Smith with more quicks and explosiveness. That may be the best example I can give you.
Well, the Giants certainly are going to hope that he can produce like Steve Smith right from the start. That'll be a nice bonus to the receiving corps. Let's head back to Twitter here. A number of people throwing in some good questions. We'll try to answer as many as we can till the top of the hour. It's SunnyBoy2323. Do you see more sacks or more picks from the defense this year?
Well, it's got to be sacks. If it's not, there's a problem.
Yes, well, based on who they brought in on the defensive line and where they finished last season.
I mean, you'd like to have 45 sacks. That's kind of the number, the bar that you'd like to have. It's unrealistic to ever go into a season thinking your defense is going to get 45 picks. I mean, that's just not going to happen.
Well, and considering how opportunistic this group was last season, it's not easy for defenses in back-to-back years to be that opportunistic.
It'd be great. It'd be great if your defense has 20 picks for the season. You know?
You'd take that in a heartbeat.
45? I think that would probably, like, be, what, at least, I don't want to say twice as much, but that'd be well above the NFL record. I'll tell you that right now.
You mean in terms of 1 year to the next?
No, just getting 45 picks as a team in one season.
45 picks,
I don't know
yeah.
anybody's ever done anything like that.
I don't know what the record is, but I would say that that's probably in the ballpark of the record.
Maybe in the Arena League?
Maybe.
A CFL?
Yes. Well, I'm looking at last season. The Giants had 23 sacks, so they were 30th in the NFL. So you got to look at it. Can you get more than 23 this year? With what you brought in and you expect the defense to be improved, I don't think that's a stretch to say you can get more than 23 sacks.
You got 45's the number you want. Okay, anything over that would be really sweet. You want to shoot for mid-40s.
Now, you had 15 interceptions last season.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not necessarily a stretch to say, can you get 16 picks as
so
a team?
I don't mean to make fun of the question, but, you know, honestly, it's got to be about the front four. The Giants went the other way, trying to enhance the secondary like what the Seattle Seahawks had done a couple of years ago, and said, okay, let's strengthen the back end and see if that is the way to go. And you know what? It didn't work out so well. They're going to go back to trying the conventional wisdom of get that front four going. Have those guys foaming at the mouth. Have those guys turn up the heat in the kitchen, and the back end will take care of itself.
Well, but you could say that if your pass rush improves, Paul, then maybe you put yourselves as a defense in a better opportunity to get those interceptions.
Well,
too.
What you want is for both numbers to go up.
Of course.
That's what you want.
Yeah. So if the pass rush improves this year, I mean, listen, on paper it seems more likely the sacks would be more so than the interceptions, because interceptions to me are a little bit more fluky of a stat.
All right, let's shoot for the moon. 50 sacks, 25 picks.
All right, now you really got
both. I want both.
This is what we needed. We needed Paul Dottino to put on his opportunistic and optimistic type of hat here. Let's take a look at
that's true fantasy football right there.
Oh, that is true fantasy football. No doubt about that. Here's an interesting projection by Marquise here at M Hale 21.
Okay.
He says this is one of those bold predictions.
Uh-oh.
If Perkins outperforms his expectations this training camp.
Paul Perkins, the running back from UCLA, fifth-round draft choice.
This is what he's thrown at it.
Okay.
I preface it by saying bold.
Yes.
Vereen could be the surprising cut this season. I'm not saying I agree with it. I just said it was bold.
That's not even bold. That's insane.
Okay, well, I'll let you label it.
I have just labeled it. Sorry.
Yes, I don't see that happening, Marquise. I respect the fact that you like to spice things up on Giants chat, but I don't think that that's necessarily
going to happen. Why did you just be as bold as saying you believe that Perkins will win a spot on the 53? I think when you say that about a fifth-round pick, that takes a few coconuts to say.
Well, and it's funny because we were talking about earlier on the program how many corners we got a phone call.
How many backs?
How many backs? I mean, I think that's an interesting conversation. It's early, but when you look at it, because you were naming, Paul, the corners that you thought you could guarantee the top three. We know that. With respect to running backs, Vereen and Jennings, you certainly
locks.
Throw into the mix.
Locks.
As the locks. So then the question becomes, outside of those two.
Got to fight.
What happens? Yeah.
Got to fight.
I think
even Andre Williams has to fight.
I agree.
Third-year player. Fourth-round pick. But you got to fight.
Which is going to make it interesting. It's going to make it exciting. I mean, that's what you want. You want those battles because, like I said, that makes your special teams that much more better, and it makes the back end so that, God forbid you suffer an injury, the guy at the end of training camp, he knew he had to bust his you-know-what off to try to make this roster. That hunger is still there when his number gets called. You want that. That makes your roster better all over when you have competition all over the place.
The good news for the Giants, not only are these rookies coming in hungry and a guy like Paul Perkins, who's obviously going to do everything he can to make this team, Andre Williams has been an underachiever his first couple of years. He knows that. And he's lost 12 pounds. And he's gone to martial arts school. And he is really determined to prove to people that he belongs here. So he's got his engine revved up. And you know Orleans Darkwa, who's been an underdog every step of the way since he got out of school, you know, and has been hurt, you know he feels that he's an underdog. So he's going to have his engine revved up too. I think that competition is going to be really hot, and you're going to get the best out of every one of those guys.
The record, according to @TobyGleish, and appreciate you throwing out the stat, 49 interceptions by the Chargers in 1961.
That's an AFL record, not an NFL record.
Look at this. We had to test you. We keep you on
your
toes there. Well, you want me to now go through the archives to find the
answer? In those days, the AFL was, they were like arena football. You know, I know you don't remember this, but they
of course. I mean, I remember it like it was yesterday, 1961.
They were pass-happy nuts. Yes. I mean, that's the whole point. The AFL came in, and they were like pseudo-arena football. They were winging that sucker around like a piece of fruit.
Yes. Well, we'll leave it at that.
We will.
That's a good way to wrap up the show.
Yes, it is.
With that being said, we appreciate head coach Brian Harsin of Boise State for joining us earlier in the program. The entire interview will be on Giants.com if you missed any part of that. So certainly head to the website. We've also tweeted that out. We appreciate his insight on Darian Thompson and Dante Dion. We'll continue to be with you on Big Blue Kickoff Live each and every weekday this week, starting at noon Eastern. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. We'll speak to you tomorrow. Have a good one.
Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got through. 35. 35, 30.
Logan intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants!